Noticing how it is to arrive for you. Not trying to find out if you're arriving well or badly, but just how is it to arrive? To notice that this is just arriving. And for some people, that's unsettling. For other people, exciting. Other people may be in a kind of numb, unable to feel, disconnected space. That's, we could say, our system's way of arriving. So we may feel positive or negative or spaced out. We may feel lots of energy or lack of energy or both. At the same time, we may also feel some as if undercurrent, not just the systematic system's way of arriving, but some undercurrent of moments of feeling connection in this place, in yourself, in this group, in this day. So it's worth just noticing how arriving is for you and how long the arriving phase lasts. And also, meanwhile, something a bit more alive that's happening as we actually do arrive. We are here. And now, if you wish, just feeling contact with the ground first. In a way, there's contact everywhere, contact with the air and the ground. But for now, if we feel the contact with the ground for a few moments, if you like. And come into the ears. Let the eyes rest. There may be thinking. Thinking may be on or off, but let that be unimportant. Thinking may be on, unimportant. Thinking may be off, not important. Contact with ground and hearing is happening, isn't it? And here at the beginning of this practice session, feel free to let the body now adjust. Feeling contact with the ground and letting hearing happen. The body might naturally make a few changes in how the body is on the ground, and you can let that happen. A especially giving space to the lower back, the neck, the backs of the legs, the heels, which is the back of the foot. Let the face go off duty. Let the face not work, not present. Let the throat understand that now silence is coming. The voice that projects outward can now have permission to relax. The chest has the chance to be off duty, to soften. To be alive. And gradually, day by day, we can let all of those ways that we point out we reach out. We face out. To let that know that there's permission to relax, to be off duty, not active, not working. Maybe the world will continue, maybe we will survive. Can let the diaphragm, so that helps us breathe across the middle of the body. Letting the diaphragm be free. Letting the breath drop down. If you wish, also relaxing the bottom of the main body. If you wish, also feeling the feet for a while. As if we hear sounds in the feet or the belly. And just being here for a while, without a job, without right or wrong. Just being here. And being here without right and wrong. What it means is that when the mind starts to want to find right and wrong, so the main job of the mind is finding right and wrong and telling a story about right and wrong. So when the mind gets active, the thinking gets active about right and wrong. Just being here means noticing that that simply is a movement happening, a mechanical movement, like a machine that accidentally got turned on. And that's all. It says nothing about life. Nothing about life is said in right and wrong. And so the practice of just being here lets us come in contact with life as if for the first time, again and again. And it can help to notice that there is a feeling of contact with the ground. Sometimes we can feel held by the ground. The body feels welcome. The being feels welcome. Sometimes we feel a tension between feeling welcome and not. What happens then if we feel the feet as well as contact with ground? Being receptive to what shifts in the body and mind when we feel our feet. Can we feel the feet? Sometimes yes, sometimes no, we can't feel the feet. Sometimes we feel the feet and we're so much in our feet that we wonder, what are feet? What is this? So we can let our experience, direct experience, open out and be free of memory, image, etc. What happens if we let the breath drop down? Does anything happen? What happens if we let hearing happen as if sounds could come into the belly or the feet, not the head? Sometimes there is simply an openness that we can just feel. And it feels good to stay with that openness. Other times, naturally, being still and quiet, feeling the ground, the feet, the belly. The breathing changes and we feel the breathing. We feel the wave that comes through the body back and forth. And we can let the wave reach far through the body. Sometimes what we mostly notice is lots of thinking, more than anything else. And then it can be helpful to turn towards the out-breath feeling, or turn towards the lower belly again and again, to have relief from the habit of thinking. So if there's openness that we can feel and the mind stays quiet with that openness, it feels good to stay there, then stay there. Why not? If the waves that happen with breathing are noticeable and feels good to feel them and to let the wave go all the way head to fingertips to heels, feet. To let all the cells receive the movements of breathing. Then we can stay with that. Why not? If mostly there's a sense of lots of thinking, and not much else, then we can practice relief. Not worrying that there's lots of thinking. That's normal, that's the training of the mind to think that much, to be that active. And so at the beginning of any new training, we need patience and courage. Gentleness. Getting into the flow with a new way with the mind. Gradually. And with all our heart. An out-breath. What does it feel like just now? Enjoying the relief that happens when we leave behind the thinking. We let that stay to the side. Unimportant, not necessarily completely gone or off. There can be a sense of sounds coming through, contact with the ground and air. Space around the body, out-breath, the actual experience of out-breath. Intensely intimate with the out-breath, not afraid of being totally in the out-breath. Not holding back one part that watches me be with the out-breath, but just being out-breath. Or being the waves that reach through the whole of the cells, or being the openness. Whatever is available. And just generally, as if the head is resting in your own lap, as if the thinking could rest into your belly. Being here. Let the neck be a bit long if you wish. The belly or chest or back or wherever you wish as a kind of center when needed to rest the head. We can let the experience of the body change as we rest into our experience, leaving memory to the side for now, leaving image of the body, of our experience, to the side for now. From your experience so far, if there are any questions, I would be delighted to hear them. Or comments, anything to share. Now and anytime. I'd like to talk maybe the theme song of the week to start the song, Trust Your Life. And first, just maybe a few practical details. Yes. You can't hear. Okay. I wonder if we could. I'll come a little closer. Because I think I'm talking not so quietly. That might help. I think she did too. That's important to know. If you can't hear me, it's good for me to know that. It doesn't stay? Okay. It's very, very good to be here with you. Thank you for coming. That's the first important practical detail. We made it. Train strikes aside. So Morel mentioned the possibility of turning off devices for it's not even a week, 5 days, I think. And it every year is a more radical thing to do, to actually turn everything off. 20 years ago, it was not really an issue. Leading retreats in the jungle in India, when no one had mobile phones, it was just the beginning of internet. There was no coverage anyway. That's not an issue. And now, every time I do a retreat, it feels more of a sacrifice to ask you to make. But you know what a difference it makes to have the space. So take out the SIM card if you need your phone as a clock, or just be clockless. That's the practical side. Another practical side is, what does it mean to you in your body and your mind not to need to say anything to anyone, not to need to have a clever or cute or charming or powerful or whatever, impressive word or a comment for 5 days. Why do we do that? So really feeling congratulations to have that, to feel gratitude to yourself, so much gratitude to yourself that you can give yourself that space where you don't have to be somebody. And all of that machine that we've developed, that we've been asked to develop, that's all about having the clever, cute, impressive, terrifying, whatever, authoritative comment, opinion, word, that whole machine to be useless for 5 days, and what that gives space for. So it's not to say that it's a small thing to do, and it's not to say that it's an easy thing to do. But it is important, and it does give space for non-verbal experience. Even when there are words going on in the mind, there's a chance to notice and be in touch with. An aliveness that can use words, but is not about words. And similarly, in terms of the structure of the retreat, where this is still really practical arrival information, or maybe we should call it departure. We're about to go on a flight. Departure information. In addition to the silence, there is this situation of being together for 5 days to be ourselves. And so there is some tension there. We're together to be ourselves. So it's partly to feel really free to be yourself, not to come here and try to be someone who meditates, but be yourself, to discover what is meditation, which is not an experience that can be put into words, though I will try my best. And so you may make some experiments this week that no one else is making. You might go off as far as you can to do some quiet singing, though we're in silence, even though you don't see anyone else doing that. You might climb a tree or whatever. And so really to feel free to let the childlike part that actually loves to discover what is aliveness, to let that take part in the retreat and put the adult in the closet on the hanger. And keeping in account the other people here. So to say one word to another person is really not okay. It's really not okay. There's no way to know what that might do to that person. The more we go into silence, the more so. And even if in the moment the person seems to be so happy that you spoke to them and yes, dinner was really good or that talk was really terrible or whatever, there might be a feeling of company in the moment, but inside both of you, something got broken. So just don't. And when accidentally it happens that you say thank you or excuse me, like, no problem. But just don't. And then there's the part that we're together for 5 days, and there's a reason that whether it would be 1 day or 1 month or here, it's 5 days. It's kind of designed to make something in us at some point freak out and think, I've got to get out of here. So if it was 1 hour, or if it was 1 day, 5 days, 3 years, whatever. And so by together saying, okay, we'll be here for 5 days, we know that we can be have the steadiness when those moments come, they will come, of thinking I'm crazy to be here, or I'm wasting my time, or I've really got to go do definitely something, whatever it is. That does happen, and it is part of the process. And so by saying, I stay for 5 days, you say, I stay true to the process, not to those kind of eruptions, like a volcano of energy, that sound very logical. And really, on the last retreat I taught in, which was in Israel a few weeks ago, there's someone who'd done many, many retreats. And it was right around the time, which is like around the second day, where it's normal that there would be the volcano. And she suddenly was sure that she may have left the stove on in her house. And so we said, okay, so just go and check. Even though we all know you didn't. But just go and check. Okay, and then another practical detail for departure is that I'm here, and I wouldn't be here except to be with you. And so if you need to talk to someone, I'm here for that. And there will be times every day, also in the hall and also privately, that you can ask questions or say what your experience is or whatever. So please don't hesitate. And sooner than later, not to wait till it's an emergency at midnight, if possible. So there are the times that are set out for meditation. It's called interviews or one-to-ones. There's the time in the hall where I say, do you have questions? There's the time that you're desperate and you just grab my elbow when we go to the side. And I have this luxury that my children are not here. The first 3 years that I taught here, I was here with my children. And so it wasn't so easy to always say, yes, I can talk to you right now, no matter what. So now it's luxury. They're with my ex-partner at home, and I'm here, free. And part of what's great about a retreat and meditation and life is that it's never the same. So I don't know how many retreats in 15 years I have led and how many I've been on before that also. I don't know, but they are all different. Everyone is different. And it's because it's an alive process. And also, you are different people, etc. And some of you I've known a long time, you're different. I'm different. And the actual process of discovery, the act, the moments of discovery, it's not an individual process. It's not a... It's very intimate, but it's not individual. And so you might ask a question that's important for me and 10 other people. Maybe because we never thought of that before, or maybe because that's what we were really thinking of and didn't give it room, or couldn't quite ask, find the words or whatever. And not only a question, but maybe a comment or something to share, something that happened equally could be important to put into words. And here is where you know your personality. If your personality is such that always you must say something, then don't. And if your personality is always you must never say anything, then please do. And then, of course, everyone is free. But if you know that I am shy also, and I am in this where I speak more on the silent retreat than any other time, so we can keep each other company. And then speaking of shy and doing anyway, in the first thing in the morning at 6:30 here in the yurt is a very strange movement exploration that you're very welcome to come to and you're very welcome not to come to. So if you already like to move, it's improvised movement mostly. And if you already feel comfortable with that, great. If you feel uncomfortable but interested, feel very free to come. You don't have to do cartwheels, you know, flips. Like, you can lie on your back and play with your finger, and it can be fruitful. So it's not that you have to be a dancer or a yogi or whatever. And even if you know you hate that kind of thing because it's so embarrassing or whatever, still you might come to face that edge, which is one of the main reasons to do this kind of movement. But just don't feel you must come, or that if you come and you think it's crazy, that the teacher is crazy and the, you know, she is, but. So the basic idea with the movement that I lead here in the hall at 6:30 for 45 minutes is to start with, we would connect with any, whatever body structure, maybe the joints, for example. So you might connect with your knee or all of the joints in your body, or the lungs or the heart or whatever, physical structure. And you feel it as best you can, which might be very little. And then you move. You let the body move, that's all. And a lot of things happen there. It's very simple, nonverbal. And then that's the basic kind of movement instruction. But in terms of a spiritual direction, what's interesting is exactly where, because it's improvised, because any movement that doesn't hurt your body is completely fine. And no one, even the teacher, no one is watching you. So what gets to come up is the feeling that I'm being watched and that I'm doing it right or wrong, though no one is watching. And so it comes really clear that this is a mechanism of the mind, purely. And what if there's movement anyway? Or stopping movement anyway, whatever, because nothing is wrong. There's not a wrong. Life goes on without the right and the wrong. And to kind of face that feeling of feeling embarrassed or feeling, I hope someone saw me because that was really good. To feel that department going on and to feel that that's not all. And to practice, actually to have time to practice with no one watching, but with company, moving anyway. It can be fun. For some people, even though they wish, they cannot do it. So, and that's fine. Some of my best friends, they sometimes will come again and they try and they just get through like that. And it's fine. We're still friends. So feel welcome either way. Please do some movement of some kind, whether you go on a walk or whether you, whatever you like to do. If you don't know what you like to do, maybe go on a walk. If you don't want to do this, it's important to have movement as a complement to all the stillness and resting. As you get rested over the days, that might naturally grow more movement in the day, not only one time. So, and then other than the movement time on the schedule here in the hall, this place, this yurt, is available the whole rest of the day and night, anytime you want to come to be still. So, by the way, it isn't where you come and do your yoga at lunch break. It's really kept for anytime you want to come and lie down or sit or stand. Come. And as you get rested, you might find that you're awake in the night and it's not so far from the tent or the room to be here. And it's a different energy in the night for meditation, and I highly recommend it as you get rested. But most likely the first few days you'll be resting and feel free. Are there any questions yet? Am I talking too fast? Medium fast. Too fast. Okay. It's really great to, usually when I teach to a group of people who don't all speak English as a native language. And it's so good. Even though sometimes I lose track and I speak too fast. So even if English is your first language or whatever, mother language, let's just use the chance that not everyone has English as a first language, and it could be worth asking, what does that word mean? So even the most obvious word, or actually especially the most obvious word, like rest, what is rest? Or if actually the talk that I want to give this evening, which I may or may not leave myself time to give, trust your life. Like, what is trust? That's the talk. What is life? We're going to ask those questions. And that's partly because as soon as we start to take a word for granted, we think we know what trust is or rest. We lose track of what's important. And then further, more important, the reminder that I'm speaking English, which is just one language that not everyone knows perfectly, can help us keep, like, really realize deeply in our system, in our cells, that the nonverbal experience comes first, is more important. The words are there to help, if they help. But our training and our education and our habit is to put the words first. We want to understand conceptually what is a retreat first, then we sign up for the retreat. We want to understand conceptually what is meditation, and then we will, okay, but wait, what is the meditation posture conceptually? I don't want to actually try it. I want to know how you do it and how you've done it and how the thousands have done it. And then I'm willing to sit down or lie down. That's our training and our habit. And it's so unhelpful. It makes us lose track of actually the learning part of us. So it's good to have some sense of, like, the dining hall is over there and breakfast is at 8 o'clock. That's good to know. And this is where we're going to be meeting mostly for meditation. And this is called a yurt. Okay. But just noticing the tendency for the words, ideas, concepts, ideologies to take first place and the whole kind of platform. And the practice of finding their place and leaving room for life. Leaving room for experience that sprouts wisdom. So I just came across a lovely line from, and I realize I don't really know properly how to say Goethe. Thank you. I've only ever heard bad English versions of saying Goethe. Like Goethe. So he says, whom shall you trust, honest friend? Let me tell you, for I know the answer, he says. Trust life itself. It knows more than any teacher or book. If only I would dare to say the German for you. It's there. I don't know any German, so I won't try. I just like how he's asking the question, whom shall you trust, honest friend? What would you call? So he says, wem zu glauben ist? Wem zu glauben ist? Wem zu glauben ist? Redlicher, I don't know how to say, Freund. Red liquor is what it looks like. which I'm sure it is. How do you say the R's in German? Redlicher. How would you say how do you translate Redlicher? Then we have the East German and the West German.
Redlich.
How would you translate it into English?
It's a talk, you see.
It's not really
ehrlich. Honest in speaking, really. Same, it's an old word for honest. It's an old.
An old word for honest.
Yeah.
Honest speaking,
and
though.
And speaking is in it, in the word.
Okay. I like this as a starting point. Whom shall you trust? Honest friend. Because the starting point of the retreat is honesty. So we have that permission to be oneself, not to be a meditator, to be oneself. And then the first honesty that happens is we kind of go, whoops, who is that? What is that? How do I do that? To be myself, we have the programs of be myself. Be myself, I like to drink coffee. Be myself, I like to dance. Be myself, I like the river. But like, be myself, it gets slippery already from the beginning. But there is the sense of honesty, being honest together. And then the basic practice that people have heard of now, probably mindfulness, which is just noticing what's happening. Actually, a German friend, Ernst, gave my favorite translation or description or explanation of mindfulness as honesty. What's happening now? What's the experience? So when we feel that sense of honest friend, with oneself, with myself, with yourself. Honest friend. That's like the basis of meditation, of life, of, okay, from here we can move, we can find out what is life. Honest friend. So we can kind of keep our sensing, looking, hearing, listening open during these days together, what brings out honesty and friendship with yourself? The moments where that happens, what supported that? It's a happening, but then we can check. Maybe being in nature for some people helps. Maybe being quiet helps. Maybe certain early in the morning, first thing in the morning, or last thing at night, maybe that's more likely that there's that. And then the question, whom to trust? So when we have the sense of honesty and friendship, we're willing to say what our best guess is. We know we don't know. That's the first honesty. We know we don't know. But best guess, maybe there's some sadness, or maybe there's some feeling distress, or maybe there's some joy that I don't understand. Honest spoken friend, whom to trust? In the silent retreat context, it's a great question, whom to trust. Also to question the question, whom to trust? Is there someone to trust? Is that movement of wanting to trust someone honest and friendly? Most often, the movement to trust, what we call trust, someone else, is not friendly. It's demanding. It says, I want you to be reliable for me. I want you to be always nice to me. I want you to always fill in the blank. Something. I want you not to be alive, but to be predictable. Welcome. Please take some cushions and be comfortable. And so we can keep the question, whom to trust, honest friend, and keeping it open as a question. What does it mean to trust someone? And when is it not really trust, but demand? Demand that I feel insecure, so you give me confirmation. And when you don't, I have the right to be angry. Isn't that, I mean, often that's what we would call trust. But I'm not saying there isn't something called trust that happens between people. And this is where the words can be tricky. If I'm so used to thinking that trust is the demand that you give me confirmation that I'm okay, because I can't be bothered to go to the depth of the not okayness to find okayness. I can't be bothered to go there. So I want you to do it for me. We're used to that being called trust. And so when we feel something else with another person, if we feel that with someone else, not may not be, if we feel that, we feel something else rather, that we could call it trust. There's a kind of openness, a kind of connection, fluidity, a certain kind of bond that is freeing rather than binding. The word can be confusing. So there's trust that can grow, that's not a demand, but it is demanding. There is a bond. It has a kind of foreverness to it. It's not like a conditional bond. It's for this lifetime, this is like this. This openness with fluidity, connection, a kind of, we resonate together in a way that is enriching but unpredictable. And so sometimes when there is trust with another person, we actually avoid contact with that person. We do everything else first, and then we might get around to phone them or see them. Or so that's one direction that we could go with, whom to trust, honest friend, but also in the direction of Goethe. Whom to trust, honest friend, trust life itself, he says. It knows more than any teacher or book. Trust life itself. We get again to recover the question, what is trust? What is trust? And trust life itself? Okay, what is life? So do you want to go more into trust or more into life today? We'll do both. We'll do both. Just briefly, just not much longer, we'll go, so don't worry. So we'll begin to go into the question, what is trust? And the wider context of the question again is, okay, we can be ourselves. There can be honesty. Then what happens? What movement comes from honesty? Including the honesty, I know, I don't know. Including the honesty, I know I don't know who I am. Including the honesty, I know I don't know how to be myself or what myself is. It's a very humble position that we can practice entering. And how is it? Is humble so bad? And one movement or one thing that can happen from honest friend experience of honest friendship, honesty and friendliness. There can be a movement of trust. And let's feel into that. What is that? We can also feel the other side. What are the movements that happen when I'm unwilling to admit that I don't know? Or I don't want to admit that I know I don't know. And so I move from fear. So here's where words can be helpful, to be really simple. What trust isn't is fear. Trust is not fear. Fear is not trust. Trust can handle fear. Trust can encompass, like, trust has space for fear. And on the other hand, fear has no space for trust. Trust may still be going on, but the experience of fear leaves no room for the experience of trust. So we can notice, this just gives a really easy chance to notice in the next 24 hours, for example. When fear is on, what is it like? When the movement is from fear, what is it like? When there is fear, but also space for something else, what is it like? What happens? When there's honesty that there's fear, what is it like? When there's friendliness despite the fear, or even with the fear, what is it like? So one of the things that can happen, there's honesty and friendliness, and if we think of, for now, trust as a kind of spring, so where the water comes out of the ground, a spring of something. We can call it inspiration or energy or willingness, or a kind of staying true to life or aliveness, even though there's fear or pain or difficulty, etc. So one of the things that can happen when there's this spring of trust is that we can be moved not from fear. And this is something I really invite you to play with this week together. To be moved not from fear, to be moved not from a sense of individuality, separateness. And to really playfully notice the difference. When you're being moved, the mind is being moved into thinking, the heart is being moved into pain, past hurts, etc., from a sense of fear and separateness. What is it like? How does it go? What happens next? What are your options? And then even if there's fear and a sense of separateness, there's also a little space. What happens? What are your options? What is the thinking? What's the quality? Does that make sense so far? So it's an experiment to be made over and over again. To be made. An experiment. To do. So practice isn't something that happens without doing it. So it's an experiment to do. And then the quality of that spring that we can call trust, maybe, that we wonder whether we trust someone or whether we trust life. The quality of that is effortless. The spring bubbles up. So there may be efforts to be made and practices to be done to reveal a space where that can bubble up. But we can't force ourselves to trust. We can't make the spring come up, however much we might try. So there's what needs to be done, and there's what cannot be done but happens. Okay? And to really tune into the quality both of when we are doing what needs to be done, and when what needs to be done is resting and letting happen, what that feels like. So from the Tao Te Ching, this is a translation by someone named Red Pine. And this teaching was a discovery, a happening. Someone asked a question and someone else gave a response in a particular moment, in a particular place. And then someone else translated it in a particular moment of their lives into a particular language, etc. So it's partly an encouragement to participate in that flow of discovery. Whispered words are natural. So it's talking about going from now, our normal way of entering a project is that we either feel already too tired to start, or we try so hard that we're going to be too tired to finish. And what we need is another, a totally other way, another source of energy, another quality. Whispered words are natural. A gale, so a big storm, doesn't last all morning. Although we did have a storm that lasted all night, last night. A squall, so another, like a loud, violent storm, doesn't last all day. Who else could make these, so the storms, who else could make these storms other than heaven and earth, so the forces of nature? If heaven and earth can't make things last, they can't even make a storm last all day or all morning. What about people? What about humans? So therefore, in whatever we do, if we know that our normal way of using force can only make something last so long, we can be busy with something for a certain amount of time, and then that ends. Then in whatever we do, let those on the way be one with the way. Let those who succeed be one with success. Let those who fail be one with failure. Be one with success, for the way succeeds too. Be one with failure, for the way fails too. When he says, let those on the way be one with the way, he's saying what I was trying to say, as there's another way of letting the spring effortlessly bubble up. So we do what needs to be done to clear space, to let something effortlessly bubble up. And the timing of the bubbling up, and when it's stronger and when it's less strong, and when it's easy and when it's hard, is not in our, we don't have the control volume set for that. It's an impersonal happening, which means on the one hand, it's not a sign that you're especially great, that the spring is bubbling up. And it's not a sign that you're especially terrible when the spring is quiet. It's not a sign about you as an individual person, how you think you're doing today, how you think your meditation is going, or even how your meditation feels today, or even how your life story feels today. You think you're doing well, you think you're doing badly. It actually doesn't say anything about you, in fact. So the beginning of this, we can call it maybe a poem or teaching. Whispered words are natural. So that means whispered words are an example or a metaphor or symbol for those on the way being one with the way. It's an example or a metaphor for what it might be like to be carried by life, by aliveness, rather than to be working against it. So whispered words, and then over the centuries, different later teachers gave their comments, and it's all along these lines, that whispered words could even mean not words. It could even mean not speaking. But the basic idea is that what is that whisper of connection, that whisper of sustainable energy that happens and keeps happening and keeps happening to the point that as we get more clear and silent, we can hear it happening while we are asleep. So it's so far away from how we calculate how we're doing. But there is in us that sensitivity, that radar, that ability to feel finely and clearly. So just like when we practice before and we let sounds come in and the sounds are immediately heard and completely gone, isn't it? Isn't that right? Something in us heard the sound as it happened and is no longer with the sound as it's not happening anymore. So something in us, a receptivity that's absolutely clear. And whether we want to call that active because of the immediacy, or whether we want to call it passive because it's not adding, we want to call it receptive because just as it happened and as it's gone, it's gone. So that simplicity and that capacity is our way to get a sense of how aliveness is already ready. Absolutely precise, and with the aliveness and the uniqueness of that experience, and completely letting it be, it's dead and gone. Clean. And how much energy of myself did it take to hear that? Zero. Because I come in much later. The sound has already been heard. And then later I realize, oh, that was a bird. And I heard it. Or, oh, I didn't hear it. But wait, I heard it, but then I wasn't there to hear it. So, and if we can just let our experience clearly speak to us, something in me heard the bird while I wasn't listening. I wasn't paying attention. And trying to fit me in is where we get in trouble. Trying to fit me in as the listener and give me credit for doing so well at listening and being mindful of the sound is where we lose our energy, where we're spending energy that we don't have to spend. Does it make sense? So meditation is not trying to get that eye in to the same boat as the sound. It's just simply noticing the eye is on a completely different boat. The direct experience is on a different boat, so to speak. And sometimes they bump into each other, the boats. But we don't need to worry so much about including that little eye. And we do need to practice making room for that experience that's already going on in our experience. And so the sound is there, and that's a sound I've heard all my life. Not all constantly, but in my childhood we had that bird. In my childhood I thought the name was a different one. I thought it was a different one. I always in my mind called it a whippoorwill, which it isn't. As a child. And so after hearing the freshness of just the sound, there's the name, whether it's correct or incorrect, the name that we give it, and the memories that are associated with the sound. And that all can be as beautiful as you like. Let it be beautiful. But the sound is the sound. And the memories, if it's sweet, that's fine. But that's memories that are sweet. It's another boat. That whispering quality, that receptive quality, if you like, or the total active, alive quality, already awareness, already aliveness. Doesn't cost energy. And we can rely on that. We can come to rely on that. It has room for everything else. And any other boat doesn't have room for everything else. That's okay, it's like the river, let's say. It has room for all the boats. So it's that whisper that we can then just practice resting into that aliveness that's already there. And it takes time to get accustomed to it. Not only doesn't cost us energy, it is so powerful. There's so much energy. It's very energetic that we have to gradually get accustomed to being in contact with that much aliveness, consciously in contact with it. If we weren't in contact with it already, we would be dead. But to be consciously in contact with it, to let it come into all of our cells and all of our broken heart pieces and scattered mind pieces and collective unconscious pieces and etc. everywhere. To let that have us is a gradual process. That feels like sprouting. It feels like when you sprout seeds, first a little root comes out and it's very exposed, very vulnerable, very alive. It's going down into the ground. There's no sign above the earth that anything's happening. But we can feel, often through connection to the belly, we can feel intense aliveness with no sign above the earth, no sign above the horizon that anything's happening. And then we can confuse ourselves. Nothing's happening, but I feel this intensity. And it's a chance to gravitate towards the feeling of the intensity and trusting that. The childlike part of us already knows how to go with that and can learn to trust that, going with that. The adult thinking part does not know how to go with that, but can learn. So feeling for the whispered words, which might mean feeling for the nonverbal experience, might mean feeling for that where there is intensity in just hearing a sound or feeling the ground or nothing. Intensity in the discovery that, oh, I always assumed that whatever, I'm stupid or that I'm great or whatever assumption. We realize that the assumption has been always turning us in a certain direction for no reason. Closing us off to certain people, opening us to certain people, etc. And so the whispered words, the nonverbal experience, as well as the kind of slight instructions that come inside us, that we would like to postpone. We'd like to say tomorrow. We'd like to say, well, once I see it written in a book, or that the teacher says it's okay, or that no one's watching because it's embarrassing. That the whispered words that come as if out of nowhere and don't have confirmation. And even when the teacher says, yes, great, do that, we feel as if we are without confirmation. The feeling is that shaky. So we're just on retreat having the chance to notice that most of the time our system is in a state of alarm, and to notice what helps us come out of alarm. And for example, the hands like this on the body can be helpful. Chest and belly, shoulder and hip, hips, inner knees, any finger. These things can really help. The letting the breath drop down, feeling the feet, softening the bottom of the body. All of these things can help when we notice that our alarm system is on, to turn the alarm system off. And our reactivity, our training, the way that we're trained for all of our pain to come up when a tiny little painful thing happens. Someone looks at us in a weird way and, the whole life of rejection or superiority or whatever the game may be comes on. And so if we know that we're all in that same situation, it's not a shameful private secret. It's happening. And if we know it's just an alarm system that came on, the wires got crossed, and we can learn how to turn that off or down. And meanwhile, tune into something else, which could be direct experience, the ground or the breath or the sounds. Dropping the breath. Looking at something in nature. Remembering what's important. Thinking that thought. May I be peaceful. Shifting from the sense that, oh, I'm such a mess, or I don't have any idea of what's going to happen, or I shouldn't be so angry, or whatever. To shift it from the sense of lack of what I don't have to the knowing that I love. So if I feel rejection, I feel unloved. We can shift that from a sense of the lack of love and connection to, from the same place, the other side of the coin, so to speak, the feeling that I know love is important. And then we start to get the sense of trust. I can trust the love of love. I can trust the love of connection, the wish for connection I can trust. I may not know where to go with it or how to act from here, but I know that's true. I can feel connection is important, love is important, clarity is important, stillness is important, whatever you might find. Joy is important. We can feel that. And the practice of shifting from where it's like a disaster, I don't have any love or connection or stillness, that thought and that pain and that alarm system, and shifting into the deeper reality where I know I love love. I love love. I love stillness. I love feeling in a flow with life. I love aliveness. Okay. Are there any questions or comments? So let's end with a couple of moments together silent. resting into the ground and removing a sense of demand. Honoring connection with the ground, your presence here, the fact that here is where you are. And just feeling free now to go rest or to stay longer if you have energy. To have a cup of something hot or to have a little walk. Feeling yourself present on the earth. The lower belly, the feet, present, allowed to be here. Thank you.